All right, so have you ever thought about all the money that goes into state parks or, huge infrastructure projects like bridges and stuff and how that's all managed? And what happens when there's a disagreement about where that money should actually go?
Oh yeah, for sure. That comes up all the time.
Well, today we're diving into a case that really throws this all into the spotlight. It's the 1976 Florida Supreme Court case, Division of Bond Finance v. Smathers. This one's going to give us a peek behind the curtain at how states juggle their finances and the crucial role the Constitution plays in keeping things in check.
Yeah, this wasn't just some theoretical legal debate. I mean, you had the Florida legislature on one side, Governor Reuben Askew pushing back, and at the heart of it, all these really core principles of how a state can borrow money and spend it. And what makes it even more interesting is that it all revolved around protecting environmentally endangered land. So I'm sure that resonates with a lot of our listeners out there.
Totally. And if you're out there listening, especially if you're thinking about a career in law, this deep dive is like a masterclass in state finance. The separation of powers, that whole dance between different branches of government, and of course, constitutional interpretation, like how to actually apply those big ideas to real-world situations.
Yeah, exactly.
So today we're tackling two big questions. First off, was the legislature's attempt to move this bond money around even constitutional in the first place? And second, did the governor's veto throw a whole other wrench into the constitutional works?
Let's rewind back to 1976 to see how this all began. So that year, the Florida legislature passed their General Appropriations Act, their big budget bill. And tucked inside was this little thing called a proviso.
A proviso. Okay, so what's that? What's a proviso in this context?
All right, so a proviso, it's basically like a condition or a rule attached to certain funds, like saying, hey, you can use this money, but only for this very specific thing.
Got it. So what was the specific this in this case?
Well, this proviso was pretty targeted. It basically said that money from what are called general obligation bonds, and these are important to understand. So these bonds are basically loans that the state takes out, and they're backed by the full faith and credit of the state. So it's like the state's pinky promise saying, we'll pay you back. And typically, these bonds need voter approval, and they're meant for these big long-term projects, capital projects like building roads, universities, or in this case, acquiring land that's environmentally sensitive.
Right. Okay, makes sense.
But here's the kicker. This proviso said that before this bond money could be used to buy that endangered land, it had to first go towards paying off debts that were already on the books for the Land Acquisition Trust Fund.
Oh, so they were basically trying to use money that was supposed to be for buying new land to pay off old debts.
Yep, and that's what sparked all the controversy.
I bet. So what did Governor Askew think about this little switcheroo?
He was not a fan. He straight up vetoed that proviso, arguing that it was like totally against the Florida Constitution. And this is where those two big legal questions we talked about really come into play.
All right, so let's break down that first constitutional question. Did the legislature even have the power to try and shuffle this bond money around like that? What does the Florida Constitution say about all this?
The whole case hinges on Article 7, Section 11A of the Florida Constitution. It's the heart of the legal battle. This section lays down the law saying state-backed bonds, those loans we talked about, can only be used for financing or refinancing state capital projects. And they even give examples like building stuff, developing parks, and very importantly, acquiring land.
Okay, so if the Constitution says this money is for capital projects like buying land, how did the legislature think they could use it for something else?
Well, that's exactly the argument against the proviso. Opponents said that using bond money to pay down debt, even if it's debt from old land purchases, doesn't count as financing a new capital project. Debt repayment is usually seen as a non-capital expense.
So it's like if voters say yes to a bond for a new school, you can't then use that money to pay off the electric bill for the old school, even though they're both kind of related to education.
Precisely. The purpose of the money has to match up with what the voters approved.
That makes a lot of sense. Now, about Governor Askew's veto, we said that raised some constitutional eyebrows too. What was the issue there?
The veto issue all comes down to Article 3, Section 8A of the Florida Constitution. This article puts a limit on the governor's veto power. It says that a governor can't veto a specific condition attached to an appropriation without also vetoing the whole appropriation itself.
So some people were saying that Askew, by vetoing just the proviso and not the whole chunk of money for endangered lands, maybe went a little too far with his veto pen.
Yeah, the argument was that the proviso was basically a specific condition on how that money could be used. So if the governor didn't like that condition, he should have vetoed the whole thing, not just the condition. But there's a twist. The Florida Supreme Court never actually ruled on this veto issue. They kind of sidestepped it.
Oh, really? How did they do that?
Mm.
It seems like a pretty big deal to just ignore.
The court got straight to the point. Their reasoning was that the proviso itself was already unconstitutional under Article 7, Section 11A. They said it was violative of Article 7, Section 11A on its face, meaning just from reading it, it was clearly breaking the rules because it was using bond money for debt repayment and not a capital project.
So basically, they said because the proviso was bad to begin with, it didn't really matter if the veto was right or wrong.
Exactly. It's like if a law itself is illegal, arguing about how the governor signed it becomes a bit pointless.
That's a pretty clever way to cut through all the legal red tape. Now, the source material mentions that the court took this case directly through its original jurisdiction over something called writs of mandamus. Can you explain what all that means and why it was a big deal in this case?
Sure thing. So usually court cases start in the lower courts and work their way up through appeals. But sometimes a higher court can step in and take a case directly from the start. This is called original jurisdiction. And the Florida Supreme Court has this power in certain types of cases, including those involving what are called writs of mandamus. Basically, a writ of mandamus is like a court order forcing a government official or agency to do something
Let the
specific.
illegal get it done kind of thing.
Exactly. And in this case, the state was asking for a peremptory writ, which is like an extra strong mandamus. It's like saying, drop everything and fix this right now. And what they wanted fixed was that unconstitutional proviso. They wanted it gone immediately.
And why the rush? Why not just let the case go through the normal court process?
The Corps is really worried about delays messing up Florida's whole bond program and their work with the federal government on buying up this environmentally important land. They knew that any holdup could mean losing funding and partnerships, and that would be bad news for the environment. So they acted fast.
So this shows that legal stuff isn't just theoretical. It can have real-world consequences.
Big time. So looking back at Division of Bond Finance v. Smathers, what are the key lessons, especially for all the aspiring lawyers out there listening?
Yeah. What should they take away from this?
There are three big takeaways. First, this case really drives home how important it is to stick to the Constitution when it comes to using bond money. When voters approve funds for specific projects, you can't just redirect that money for something else, like paying off old debts.
Voters said, new park, not pay the old gardener.
Exactly. The second lesson is about the separation of powers. We see how the courts can step in to settle disputes between the legislature and the governor, and they can also be strategic about which issues they tackle head-on and which ones they kind of sidestep.
Picking their battles.
Right. And the final lesson is about judicial pragmatism. Basically, sometimes courts need to act quickly when delays could cause real harm, like in this case with the Endangered Lands Program. They use their power to get things moving.
So they're not always stuck in slow motion.
Nope. And for all those law students listening, the big thing to remember is that the court's decision was based on the plain language of the Constitution, specifically Article 7, Section 11A. They didn't come up with some new fancy legal theory. They stuck to the text. So when you're analyzing a case, always start with the actual words of the Constitution or the law, and pay attention to those procedural tools like the writ of mandamus. They can really speed things up when needed.
So to sum up, the Florida Supreme Court in Division of Bond Finance v. Smathers said nope to the legislature's attempt to use bond money meant for buying endangered lands to pay off old debts. They basically drew a line in the sand and said, you got to use this money for what the voters approved.
Exactly. It's a great example of checks and balances and how the courts make sure everyone plays by the constitutional rules.
And on that note, here's a little food for thought as you keep learning about law. Think about how the principles from Division of Bond Finance v. Smathers might apply today. Like, imagine a state gets federal funds for pandemic relief, which often come with rules about how to use them. And then they try to spend that money on something totally different, something not even close to what it was supposed to be for. Could the reasoning from this 1976 Florida case be relevant today?
Definitely something to ponder, especially as you dig into constitutional law and administrative law.
Absolutely. And we encourage everyone to keep exploring Florida constitutional law, especially Article 7 and 3. It's fascinating stuff. And see if you can find other cases similar to this one, maybe in Florida or your own state. It's really interesting to see how these fundamental ideas about state finances and interpreting the Constitution play out in different situations.
It's a great way to see the law come to life.
Absolutely.
Huh.
All right, that's it for our deep dive today. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.